Good morning.
And let's first finish this section on defining the bulk operations union, intersection, and difference. We had gone through the code, but what we had gone through the correctness considerations for the code. So this is what I want to do today in the first half, and then we will move on to the data structure of tries. And the correctness I will just deal with very superficially, so we're not going to go into any lemmas, but I just want to show what the structure of the whole thing is. So what do we need to prove? In order to prove this already parametric implementation correct. So remember, we are given this join operation that takes two trees and an element and joins them together, hopefully again creating a balanced tree. I mean, that's the assumption. And then based on this join operation, we defined all of these other operations. And so the correctness will be dependent on join, and so we need a specification for join. And what is join expected to do? Well, for a start, the elements in the result tree of join will just be the union of the elements in the constituent trees and the element A itself. And secondly, the join is supposed to, again, give us a binary search tree. So if you have two binary search trees, L and R, and all the elements of the left side are smaller than A, and all the elements on the right side are bigger than A, then if you call the join operation, the result is supposed to again be a binary search tree. So the binary search, so the join operation really expects these trees to be disjoint and all smaller elements on one side and bigger elements on the other side. And then you again get a binary search tree. That's the specification. And it's supposed to hold for many different kinds of binary search trees, red black trees, AVL trees, and whatnot. And you also need a structural invariant, and we need to assume that the join operation set preserves that structural invariant. So this is just the binary search tree invariant. So we assume we have some structural invariant that depends on the exact tree type that we work with, and we assume that it holds for the empty tree, and that if it holds for a node, then it must hold for the subtrees. Remember that we're working with a fixed type of nodes where we assume we have some auxiliary information like color information in this first field, and the rest is just the left subtree, the element, and the right subtree. And so we assume that this invariant has this property that if you have a node, then the subtrees will also satisfy the invariant. And the other way around, if you have two trees that satisfy the invariant and you join them, then the new thing is again supposed to satisfy the invariant. So these are our abstract assumptions on the join operation and the corresponding invariant for the balancedness. And now, in all the functions that we defined last time, like the generic union function, they were defined in the context of having a join operation and having an invariant and assuming all these properties. Of course, for the code, you don't need the invariant and you don't need the properties, but for the proofs, we will need them. So what do we actually want to prove? We need an extended specification, abstract data type, locale, whatever you want to call it. We call that set 2, and that's an extension of the locale, the specification set that we already saw that had just the specification of the insert, delete, and isin functions that operate on a single element, and now we extend that specification with specification of the union, intersection, and difference operation for some implementation type S. That's a generic specification, and it will have these are the axioms for the union. So for the union, we expect that if S1 and S2 satisfy the invariant for that data type, then if you take the union and get out the set of union, then you really it behaves like the union operation. And similarly for the and also the union operation should preserve the invariant. So remember, these are now part of the specification of the union operation. So this is just a we can actually look at it. This is a completely independent piece. This is a completely independent specification that has got nothing to do so far with our join-based implementation. And now we want to bring the two together, that the join-based implementation of union satisfies actually those laws. And here the invar was this global invariant specification for whatever type we use to implement our sets. And similarly for intersection difference. And we just focus on union. So this is what you find in this file, set specs, where you find the basic specification of sets that we already saw a couple of lectures ago, and you find this extension with new operations, the new operations and these specifications of these new operations. And now we need to prove the correctness of the code that we gave last time for the union, etc., in the context of the join specification that we saw two slides ago. So this is the assumptions that we have on join, and this is what we want to prove about the resulting code. And so what we can prove from the code that we saw last time is that if you have a binary search tree, and you perform this union operation, and then you take the elements, then it is indeed the union of the elements. And we can also prove that if you have a binary search tree T1 and T2, then if you take the union, it's again a binary search tree. So now we are proving this for this concrete specification of binary search tree and the concrete abstraction function set tree that takes a tree into a set of elements. And also we need to prove that the invariant, this structural invariant, which we don't know anything about because it's part of the parameter of our setup, that is also preserved. If the two trees that we take the union of satisfy this inf property, then the union will also satisfy this. And of course, here we need the specification of how the join operation preserves this invariant. And in fact, the proofs are pretty much automatic, but only for the union operation. If you do the same thing for the if and the intersection operation, it becomes more complicated. In particular, for the intersection operation, you have to argue your proof has to be a bit more precise, because for the intersection operation, remember what we did. If you want to intersect two trees, then you first take the root of one tree, you split the other tree up with that root element, and then you have two small trees that you take and two big trees. I mean, two trees of small elements and two trees of big elements, and then you can intersect them separately, and then you can take. Well, you can just join them again. That was the intersection operation. But at that point, you need to argue that if you join them, you don't need to do further intersections, because here you're only small elements and here only big elements, so they are by construction disjoint. And so at that point, the intersection operation becomes a bit more detailed. You need more detail to argue same for the difference operation. But in the end, the proofs are there's nothing special going on there. And now we can really, given all these lemmas, we can show that our code, our parametric code, satisfies the specification, our extended set specification. So that was that's the Isabel speak. You interpret this set specification and you interpret the union operation in here with the union operation that you've just programmed. And you also need to interpret the abstraction function in this specification with the abstraction function for your implementation. That's the set tree function that takes a tree into a set of elements. And you need to explain what is the invariant, your generic invariant in the set specification. How is that realized in your implementation? So now you have to think about it for a moment. Remember, this is a completely generic set specification, and we're now implementing it by something that's not so generic anymore. We already assume it's a tree data type. We just haven't fixed the exact balancing stuff. So what is the invariant here on the tree level? Let me just go back. So this is the specification where of the set operations, where we make use of this generic abstraction function set from our type to the set of elements, and we make use of this generic invar. But we are performing all of this in the context of a specification for join that uses, also this balancedness invariant. So that is something you have at your disposal. So what do you think is the right complete invariant for the implementation of the set abstraction by our trees with join? That's exactly it, yeah. So it's the function that requires both. It should be a binary search tree, and it should satisfy this parametric invariant. And you can read all of that up in this file. So the point of all of this was just to explain the structure of what's going on, not the detailed proofs. But now, in the end, we want some specific implementations, and the one that I do have and that I want to show you quite briefly is the join for the red black trees. And in the end, this was actually the harder part I found. The other part, the proofs weren't so difficult, but here for the red black trees, to now implement the join operation correctly and show that it actually satisfies, it preserves the red black tree invariant, that was I found a bit more challenging. And so I won't go through the details either, but I will show you at least some of the code. And you have already seen a related code for 2-3 trees in the last exercise last week that was not perfectly in sync. You should have seen at least this slide before we now you see it. And for those of you who haven't been there, it will at least help you. So what's the idea? This is now not necessarily just red black trees. It will also work for other tree invariants, like the 2-3 trees. So you want to join two trees, L and R, and an element A in the middle. And so what you do is, for the sake of argument, we assume that L is the smaller tree than the right-hand side. Otherwise, you just get the dual situation. And smaller depends, of course, on your balancing criteria. But just take it informally. So what you do, you have L is the smaller one. So you have small tree L, and you have a big tree R. And you have, of course, one element that you want to put in the middle, but let's ignore that for the moment. So how do you join the two? Well, you simply walk down here until you're about the same. So you walk down here until you found the place where the subtree at that point is about the same size as this one, and then you join them. And then, of course, when you walk up, then you have to, you may have to rebalance things, but only along that spine. That's the idea. And of course, it depends on each individual tree type whether that will really work. And we will go through the red black tree one to show that it does work. So yeah, you descend along the left spine of the right subtree. That's exactly what we're doing here. Until you find a subtree of about the same size, depending on the balancing and size criteria. And then you try to join that here. And of course, integrate that thing into the small thing into the bigger one. And yeah, so this is the subtree. And then, yeah, naively you just, yes, why not? You replace this subtree here. If this is the T that you have found, which is of the same size as this, then you replace that with this new subtree where the A is in the middle and the T is on the right, and that goes in there. That's the idea. But of course, this is a bit naive because we have not just a binary tree, but we have also this balancing information, so you have to be you have to make this more precise depending on your tree type. And then, yeah, we balance on the way up. And this is the top level function for red black trees. So the join function that takes a left and a right subtree and an element in the middle, and then it does exactly what we saw on the previous slide. And as the height or as the size criterion, it now takes the black height. And if the black height of the right one is less than the black height of the left one, then we have the dual situation. Then you call a join right function. And otherwise, if the black height of the left is less than the black height of the right, then we have this situation on the board. And then you call the join left function, meaning you join it by descending along the left spine. And this is the smaller one. That's the implicit precondition for this function. And then at the end, you paint the result black. So that's again the red-black tree idea that if you have an overflow, you may return a tree that has a red node, and then you just make that black. And if neither this is true nor this is true, then they have the same black height, well, that's great. Then you can just join them together in one black node. So in order to implement this efficiently, this join operation, of course you need to also store the black height in your red black tree. So that means this field that contains additional information will actually have to be a pair of the color and the black height. Otherwise, you will not be able to implement this efficiently. You'll have to compute the black height, and that will be expensive. And in fact, you'll have to compute it multiple times as you go down the tree, and that's what's going to be the inefficiency. But if you store the black height in the in this additional field, then no problem. So let's fix on this function here, this join L function, which performs this thing here. This operation, it descends on the left spine, and when it finds the right place, it builds in this left subtree. And so let's see if we can get this to work together. So you can find the code in there, but let's at least try and figure out the join L function. I'll go back here to see the join function. So join L takes left subtree, element right subtree, and starts with a test. So you know, descending along this spine, right. So we know, and that will be a precondition here, that L will have a smaller black height than R, but when you descend, at some point it may actually become equal. And so that's the test. So if I'll just write BH of L is actually equal to black height of R, well, then you're in good shape. What do you do then? You have to return something like this, left, x, and right. But what kind of, do you need to call join, or is it black, or is it red? Well, yes. No. Apparently, you have to do it. I mean, I've got red, and that one works. So, to be honest, I can't now give you a very good intuitive argument why black wouldn't work. Probably because it's an overflow situation. But why does it have to be an overflow situation? Because why isn't that an overflow situation? Of course, here it is an overflow situation as well, but then you're performing also at the same time. So why is it different from here? Because here you're performing the the painting of black of the root immediately, but here you don't, but you still have to signal this overflow. So that's that. Else. Now we make a case analysis of the form of the right subtree. Of course, it can't be a leaf, but it could be a black or a red node, and that will make a difference. This happens to be the easier one, and in fact, let's go back to red black trees. This is the insertion function on red black trees. So this is it, because it's a bit like an insertion, and so maybe we can learn something from that. Any suggestions what we could do here if the two trees that we're joining, one of them is a red one? Well, we certainly have to descend, that's clear. We have to go through the, we have to go descend on the left spine and join our L into that one. So there's no question about that. So we have some call join L of our original L and x, and then this subtree of prime. And clearly, in the end, we want to rebuild things, so we will have the x prime here, and we will have the r prime here. But what you do with the with these three things? Don't be so shy. There's more than one person. Yes, it'll be a red node. So the red will just be preserved, and then if it's a black one, then we'll do our rebalancing. So that means if you have the black one, you'll again do something similar. Join L, X, L prime, and you'll have like an X prime, and you'll have an R prime, but now you'll do a little bit more. So how do you put them together? Yep, so we can actually reuse that very function here. Let's just add one, and then we make it into a black node. Oh no, sorry, my mistake. We don't need to do anything. That function does all the work. So, that's it. That's the. So we're exactly in this situation here, where this balancing function, if you go on, then it is the one that combines these three things and takes care of red-red conflicts. And that's it. But the proofs I found to be a bit tricky. And in fact, the proofs in the paper, which I'm going to refer to, they use a slightly different version of red-black trees that for certain technical reasons I couldn't use, and so I could reuse their proofs, and so everything was slightly different. And that's as far as I want to take it. In principle, that's the complete code. Of course, there's a dual version for join R, but the code is known. That is it. This is already from the insertion function. That's the thing that we use. And it's just that finding the precisely the right lemmas with all the reds and blacks was a bit tricky. And so this idea actually goes back quite a long way. There's a paper in the 90s. In fact, the paper is primarily about weight balanced trees that I mentioned briefly last time. But it also has this neat trick of using the join function to program insertion and deletion, union, intersection, and difference. It was then, but he doesn't give a proper timing analysis. So his complexity estimations are very crude, and it's only in like 2 years ago that Guy Blalock and two PhD students wrote this paper where they do give the precise analysis, the one that I showed you at the very beginning, of the complexity of this situation. Here, this one, they do show that this is the complexity of the join-based algorithm. Now, there's one other approach to union and intersection and difference that is actually surprisingly simplistic, and is almost as good as this approach here, the join-based one. And maybe we can reconstruct that, because it, as it is simplistic, it, you don't have to be terribly clever, but the key idea here is to do the bulk of the work not on the tree level, but on the list level. So have you any suggestion how you could, let's stick with union, how you could program union for two trees, not doing it on the tree level, at least not completely? Use the in-order of the two trees, so you get a list and it's already sorted, there's no sorting to be done. Then you merge them, and that gives you a sorted list of the joint tree. Of course, you merge them, eliminating duplicates, and then you again construct, in fact, a balanced tree from that list. How costly is that? So you have the two trees, let's assume they have sizes M and N. And so you first have to turn the trees into a list, so you have M plus N. Then you have to merge them. Well, that takes as long at most as the two lists are long, so it's again O of that sum. And then you have to reconstruct a tree from it. And now you have to know that this is actually possible for a number of the balanced trees, that if you have an ordered list, or well, it doesn't have to be ordered, but if you have a list, to take that list into a red-black tree in linear time, so that when you take the in order of the red-black tree, you get that list back. And so that is possible. So, in fact, was that an exercise, maybe? To take a list into a red-black tree? It wasn't. I think we thought about it, and then it was too difficult. Although I'm still puzzled that it is difficult, it shouldn't be, but we couldn't find a simple proof. So construction of red black tree from list in linear time, that is possible. And it's possible for other variants. So if you want a balanced tree, no red or black or ABL, just balanced in the sense that the leaves are only at, any two leaves are only one level apart at most. So that was our definition of balanced some way time back. A balanced tree from a list can also be done in linear time. An ADL tree can also be created from a list in linear time. A weight balanced tree can also be. So it seems that this is also a kind of a universal approach. First project into the list, then perform your set operation on the list by just merging things in the right manner. Of course, union, intersection, and difference will work differently, but they can all be done in this zipper of two lists, and then you turn the joined list back into a tree. So in complexity, you will then have O of M plus N, and that will be, if M and N are very similar, let's assume N is equal to N, then this is linear. What happens to our operation of our what happens to our join-based the divide and conquer approach. Well, if n is equal to n, then in fact you have again also a linear algorithm. So the complexity is the same, but there is a big difference between this algorithm and that algorithm. On modern hardware. Whereas this is, of course, the projection onto the list is not is parallel, but that yes, but then the merging is sequential, so you have a sequential bottleneck in that algorithm, whereas this is really the one that we looked at is completely parallel. We didn't prove that, but it's you can prove that. Right. So that I think with that I want to close the consideration of this join-based stuff, and I'll have to adjust my slides to also put something about the list-based approach on it. Right, and now we're here. Tries and Patricia tries. This is quite a different and amazingly simplistic data structure. And I assume some of you have at least heard of it. I'm not sure it's in our basic algorithms course. And this is online. This is not online because this year I'm going to skip the second half. The slide still claims both theories are there, but only one of them is there. And so what are tries? They were invented already in 1960, and they're called, well, the author wanted it, Fredkin wanted them to be called tree because it stands for retrieval. That's a terrible name because then you always get confused what tree is he talking about. And so usually people call them tries. They are search trees, but now we know that the indexing is on a list of things. Whereas before we just assumed it's something amorphous, and all we can do is compare for greater than or less than or equal. But now we actually take into account that the search key is a list. For example, a list of bits, and that's what we will use. And then each node simply maps the elements in the list to a subtry. So let me show you an example of that. I don't think it's there, no. So then I'll put it up. So it's a very intuitive little data structure. Let's assume we have the words all, and can, and car. And we want to store them in a try. And so each node of the try maps the next element in the list to a subtry. So the next element in the list, when we start at the root, is the first element. There's one subtry that starts with an A and another subtry that starts with a C. And now we, in each subtry, we index on the second element of the list. Here it's an L, and here it's an N. So we again have two subtries by coincidence. Here with the C, we have only one subtry with index with A. And now this all leads to yet another sub-level indexed by L. Then we have the N. Well, the N is already in there, but we will have to mark it as being also a terminal node. And then the end will lead to yet another level with the D on it. And then, well, in fact, we don't need this one is already a terminal node. We don't need to put a special marker on it, but this is not a terminal node, so we need to special marker saying, well, actually, a word does end here. So can and car
we have a branch, one with an N and one with an R, and both just end there. And then you can just sequentially, if you have a string of characters, you can go through the tree level by level, of course, branching into the right tree according to the character that you're searching for. So if you're searching for N, you go down here, and then you go down there, and you're at the end of the word, and indeed there is a marker that this is the end of the word, and so you will have found your word. Questions about that data structure? No, I think it's pretty clear. And this is how we implement it in a functional language. So a tree can either be a leaf, one of these things. This is a coincidence that all the leaves are at the same level. Or it can be a node, and it has this Boolean marker. Am I also the end of some search string? And then it has two subtries, because we simplicity consider only binary tries where we take the key bit by bit. Of course, if you have if you have something like character strings, then it makes sense, at least on the first few levels, to branch over all of the string, over all of the characters. But that's just a little optimization. So yeah, this is the full structure. Yeah.
Let's implement it as a pair and not as a left and a right.
I was asking myself the same question. Why are we doing that? I think I didn't write this by hand. This is really the correct definition. It really comes directly from the source file. Why would we want to do that? I don't know. I think there must be some, probably Isabel-specific technicality there, and we will probably see when I look at the code, then I'll probably say, oh, that's why I did it. That's already all. Hang on a minute. I thought I wanted to show you more than that. Apparently not. Then let's just look. I'm puzzled about this. Why do we have? Let's just take one. I'm really puzzled. Why is it? I thought I wanted to show some of this code, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I didn't. Then that's okay.
If you had, for that example, the word art, you had a branch where there's sort of three sections, how do you deal with that? There is a non-binary system.
Right. So that actually becomes a bit complicated, and there is no sort of concise way of doing that in a functional language, because you would need an array to do that, indexed by whatever the base type of your list is. Then you're into this whole problem with arrays in functional languages. So there, I think it'll be an exercise today, and it will ask you to implement the more general situation where you have not just bits, but some arbitrary base type A. And then, in fact, the implementation, morally, at each level, you have a map from the base type to a subtree. And then you need to implement this map efficiently, because the map is just some function, and that's not an efficient implementation. And so what you can do is you can then implement this, the internal branching structure in each node. Well, there's no branching there, but here's a bit of branching. You can implement that by, again, some search tree. And so I think the exercise will be to implement this node by a search tree, like a 2-3 tree or something. But the array-based one that requires a function language with arrays, and then you have the problem that you're doing update in place, and then referential transparency is lost, and all the good things about function languages are no longer applicable. But if you use a search tree inside to branch on the character, say, then that would work. Okay, so now let's maybe not look at the code. Let's look at an optimization. We want to condense, we want to compress sequences of edges without any branching. And here is a simple example. These two characters, one after the other, why make that two levels? Why not instead have one level and write LL here? And that's the optimization that's called Patricia tries, and it does exactly what the text says. It compresses sequences of edges where no branching happens. And this is the implementation type, so it looks similar to the previous one. We have a leaf, and the leaf is marked with a P to say that it's the leaf of the Patricia tree, and the node is marked with a P because it's the node of the Patricia tree. And here we now have, in addition to the Boolean field and the two subtries, we also have a Boolean list, and that's the list of prefix that was unambiguous. The prefix that led you to this place, and only this is now the these two here are the branching structure where you branch on one bit to go left or to go right, and this is just you don't need to store this in the as a tree structure, but it's just sufficient to store this part as a list structure. And so in Patricia try, yes, I think the only difference is that these two would be compressed, and then also the and would be no. I was too quick now, I can't undo here. Of course, I can't compress here. Why was I, that was a, why is the compression not possible there?
Yeah.
Yes, so no compression there. Thank you. But now I do want to look at a bit of this code. Right. So let's look at least at isin and
But you could compress CA, right?
Indeed. I did on my piece of paper. So that would be a Patricia plan. And so let's look at some code. The is in code, and this is one of the worst acronyms I've ever seen. No, let's just stay there, and let's look at is in, and let's look only at the interesting case. If we have a node Patricia try, we have some prefix, and we have a flag if this is also an internal terminal node, and we have two subtries L and R. And we are searching for a key sequence. And I will start with a let to give us some short names. Let N equals length of PS. Of course, if you really want an efficient implementation, you wouldn't
recompute the length every time, but you would also store the length. Well, actually, it depends. No, it would probably take more space than it's worth it. And then you want to compare the key that you've got and this prefix ps. How do you compare them? Yeah, but that would just compare one element. We can do better. Remember that there's a take function.
Yes, it's take the first element of case.
Yeah. Take. I guess the order is yes, n, ks. So you look at the first n characters of ks, first n bits in our case, and compare it to that prefix. And if that's equal, then what you do. Now I'm doing another case here. And now I'm looking at what's left after I take the first n characters. Sorry, so if it's let's start with the simple one first. At least I think that's the simpler one. Yes. So let's start with the empty case first.
Okay, then
return B. Then this is return B, exactly. Because then you know your key is exactly that prefix, and then your key is in that tree if and only if the that node is that internal node actually is a terminal node, so you can just return B. And otherwise, if you have what did I call it here, some key K and some remainder sequence KS prime, then what would you do? If k, then what? So, of course, you have to know what the principle is. So let's assume true is on the right and false is on the left. Then, so you, okay, then you just call is in recursively with the right subtree, well, the correct subtree. So let's assume k means the right one. If the true bit is the right one, so you call it with r. And
sequence?
Drop n k's. Drop n plus 1 k's.
K's prime.
Yes.
And otherwise, it's L instead of R. And there's another case. Not another case, but another else that we haven't paid that for. It's so simple, I almost forgot about it. That's false. Because if your key, the first n characters of the key are not the prefix, well then it's just not in that tree. And note that sometimes one does and sometimes one doesn't have to take care of a situation where the n is actually less, it is bigger than the size of the sequence. If you take the first 10 characters of a 5-character long string, the take will just give you the first 5 characters, but that will work fine here. So let's assume here the length of the prefix is 10, and your your key string is 5, then you want to take the first 10 characters of this only 5-character long string, and so you get 5 characters, and then you compare this 10-character string with the 5-character string. Well, it's not going to be equal, and so that's perfectly right, because your key is just too short.
Okay. So, yes, I think that's as far as I want to take it. We could also go through insert, but I think this illustrates the idea sufficiently.
And now what we want to do is we want to verify that the Patricia try actually is a correct implementation of a try, and also that a try is a correct implementation of a set. In that two-stage process, we need a function that takes us back to the original tries from a Patricia try. And so what we're doing now is something called data refinement. That is, we're replacing one data type by a more refined, a more concrete data type that has some advantages, like it's more space efficient or more time efficient. Here, it's a saving in space. And let me just tell you a few general words about data refinement. It's very similar to what we've already seen in data type implementation, where you have an abstract specification that has certain, well, in the case that we looked at, it was a set that was implemented by a tree. Now here it's the same thing. We're implementing a try by a Patricia try. And the situation is like before. We have some abstract type A, and it's defined by a concrete type C, and on that concrete type we have some invariant, and we need an abstraction function from the concrete type back to the abstract type. For the trees, it was the set tree function that takes us from a tree to the elements. We haven't seen the abstraction function here yet. Then we need to implement the interface functions. So we need to implement each function that we had on the try, also on the Patricia try, but they are exactly the functions for implementing the set interface. And then you need to prove the implementation, that if some element T on the concrete level satisfies the invariant, well then this homomorphism condition must hold. That is, if you apply the concrete function, the concrete implementation, to the concrete element, and then you abstract to the abstract level, that should be the same as first abstracting your type to an abstract value and then applying the abstract function to it. And it also has to preserve the invariant, all the concrete operations. So this, if you prove all of that, then you know your concrete type correctly implements the abstract type.
And this is a too simplistic a view because the function f may have more than one parameter and it may also return a different type than the abstract or the concrete type, but that is sort of schematically what's going on. And in the original version of this lecture, we had multiple refinement steps that you could then just compose, but we will just look at one refinement step, namely from a Patricia tri back to a tri. So that was, remember, this is the tri, and I'm surprised by this sequence of my own slides. Now we see all the code. Well, I'm not going to go through it now. and now this is the first abstraction, namely to show that the tri correctly implements the set interface. And so we need to prove, amongst other things, for the isIn function, we need to prove this. And that may look a bit strange. Where does that come from? It makes sense, but does it drop out of thin air? That if you when you insert some sequence into a tri and then you ask whether another sequence is in the tri, well, that should be the same as either AS is equal to BS or the sequence BS that you're asking about is already in the original tri. So logically that makes sense, but it seems to come out of nowhere. Well, it doesn't. What's happening here is a little optimization. If you go back to the set interface, then in reality the set interface asks you to prove this, namely that you have some abstraction function, let's call it alpha, and alpha of alpha of insert AST is the same as alpha of T union AS. That's the specification how the insert operation should behave under the abstraction that takes you from a tree back to a set level. And this is just a modified version of this because we have now reused the isIn function that we have on each try, that takes a try, a list of booleans, and returns a bool. We now also reuse that as an abstraction function. Why can we do that? Well, this type here, the result type of the isIn, it takes a try, and now you can think of it as just returning another function, bool list to bool. That function, something to bool, is isomorphic to sets. So rather than defining yet another abstraction function, we simply reuse the isIn function, and instead of proving this law here, which is for sets, we prove the corresponding equation, but now for modified, because the result of isIn is not a set, but it's a function to bool, which is morally the same thing, but in the type system it's a different thing. And so instead of writing alpha, we write isIn, but then isIn doesn't return, isIn doesn't return a set, and we can test for equality of sets, but isIn returns a function, and so we have to apply it to yet another argument, that's the BS. And then we also, if you consider this as a function, it's the function that that either tries this or tries this, and that's exactly what's happening here. So I'm beginning to see that this is too clever to explain this in a short while. I shouldn't have done this. This is too much of an optimization. I should really have defined a separate abstraction function and not gotten into this trouble. So it's just for presentation purposes. It was not a good idea. So
let's just say we have gone through the correctness proof of the try interface, the try implementation with respect to the set interface, and now we take the second step. We show that the Patricia try is correct with respect to the try. And so this is the Patricia try, and now we need to think about an abstraction function that takes us back from a Patricia try back to the original try. And this is the, here's the code. I don't want to, we don't have that time for that. This is the function I want to focus on, the abstraction function from Patricia try back to a try. So remember, the difference was that in the try, we had the node was just had just this Boolean marker and then through subtry, and in the Patricia try, we also had a prefix list in there in the node. That was the difference. And so the abstraction function that takes us back from a Patricia try back to a normal try, well, leaves are just mapped to leaf. And if you have a node with a prefix and then the flag and then the two subtries, well, what you do is you map the two subtries back, then you create a node on the try level with that same flag from up here. And then you simply take that prefix and you define an auxiliary function that prefixes a try with a sequence of nodes, a sequence of characters, of bits in our case. So that would simply create these intermediate levels in front of the of this node, where the and that here would create a sequence of tries without a sequence of nodes without any branches, or a nesting of nodes without any branching. And then, this is the prefix try that takes a Boolean list and a try and gives you back a try with these prefix nodes in front of it. And then you have to prove the every function on the Patricia level correctly implements the original is-in function on the try level modulo the abstraction function. So you have to prove that it doesn't matter whether you perform an operation on the Patricia level or you first abstract the tree that you have, the try that you have, and then perform the operation on the original try level. And same for the insert, if you this is on the Patricia level. If you insert on the Patricia level and then you abstract that to a try, that should be the same as first abstracting the Patricia try to a try and then inserting with the insert code on the abstract level. Not abstract, still on the try level. And at that point, I really want to call it a day. I'm sorry, I glossed over so much here. It would have been interesting to go through some of the code, but we just don't have the time for it. And part of the reason that we don't have the time for it is that this is the evaluation time, and so I'm supposed to leave the last quarter of an hour of one of the lectures in that time period for you to fill out the online evaluation questionnaire for the course, and so I'm very happy to do that. And in fact, we're finishing 20 minutes early even, and that's because I didn't really have more to say, or rather there is quite a bit more to say, but I'm dropping all of that. So there's a what I wanted to get to after the Patricia try, I wanted to talk about a further optimization where if you know that your key length is limited and say it's limited to 32 bits, then you can actually use a much more compact representation to perform these operations with bit patterns and functions on the bit level. But that just takes too much time, and I want to move on next week to priority queues, therefore finish this today. And in fact, next week I will be away at a
a conference, and Peter Lammich will substitute for me and will tell you all about priority queues. Any questions about the material? If not, then happy filling in of the evaluation form.